This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
I wouldn't normally start with a story like this, especially because it's a national story. I usually start with a local story on the show, but no one seems to be talking about a report that I found at foxnews.com, but frankly, even on their television network, they're not really talking about this. A high-profile group of Senate Democrats put out what seems to be a veiled threat against the conservatives on the Supreme Court of the United States. This is a serious deal. This is a legitimate concern coming from anyone who wonders whether or not the Supreme Court is being truly allowed to be independent from political interference. The Democrats filed a brief in a case related to a New York City gun law, a bad law, an anti-gun law. And in it, the Democrats referenced recent rulings by the conservative majority on the court. And in referencing it, they kind of put out a veiled threat. They write in this brief, the Supreme Court is not well, and the people know it. Perhaps the court can heal itself before the public demands it be, quote, restructured in order to reduce the influence of politics, end quote. Now, this was originally highlighted by our friend Ron Blitzer over at foxnews.com. And he notes that they were quoting a poll by Quinnipiac University in which 51% favored a restructuring. Now, what that looks like, I have no idea, nor do I think the people who were asked that question know. But we do know in this context, we've heard a lot of Democrats running for president calling for court packing, basically putting a whole bunch of judges on the bench so that they can win arguments. Now, signed on to this particular brief, Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, they're all Democrats, Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, Mazie Hirono from Hawaii, Richard Durb, Dick Durbin from Illinois, and Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who, of course, is also running for president. Now, the implications of this story are pretty incredible. And this is getting very little coverage, if any at all, on TV. That's why we're talking about this. This is a veiled threat against the conservatives on the Supreme Court, and it seems pretty clear. Rule in the way we want you to, or we're going to put you out of a job. Or we are going to restructure you so you do not have those types of powers anymore. Now, of course, this wouldn't happen if we had a whole bunch of liberal justices on the court. In a world where Hillary Clinton were president and she was able to put two liberal justices there, God forbid a Republican senator put this kind of pressure on that Supreme Court. God forbid the coverage. This would be leading news on CNN, on MSNBC. It would be condemned in every editorial page of every newspaper in this country. And they would be outraged by this kind of abuse, by this kind of threat, and the implications of this. Because if this were to be taken as a serious threat, you could very well see a judge not feeling like he or she could vote their conscience, could vote based on the rule of law. Why is this okay? How is this okay? Do you honestly think such a threat, which we're calling it veiled, I suppose it's subtle, it doesn't seem all that subtle to me, would this threat get any coverage if it was a Republican? Yes. The new rules of the game, from a Democratic perspective, is very simple. Vote with us or else. Side with us or else. Or else we're going to boycott your business, or else we're going to try to get you fired, or else we're trying to restructure you, or else we're going to label you a white supremacist or a Nazi. These are the new rules. Bullying. We used to look at the Supreme Court, even at times when things were rather contentious, as a group of people who are supposed to be revered, who are supposed to be given their independence, who are supposed to be given their space. And we've decided now that we're no longer going to abide by those rules because the Democrats are still upset that they lost the election, that they weren't able to put on the court the justices that they wanted to, and they're seeing some significant losses when it comes to topics that they're really passionate about. I appreciate the passion the same way I appreciate anyone's passion on any political issue, but this is one step too far, and more people need to be paying attention to it, including you guys. Story's up right now at foxnews.com. You should get the story. You should post it absolutely everywhere. It's that important. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Now, the SPD is investigating a potential hate crime or hate incident targeting synagogues in South Seattle. A flyer was posted on a group of synagogues in Seattle of a comic of the Squad biting a comic arm, and on the arm it says America, so they're biting the arm of America, and below it, it says deport the commie brown infestation. And then it includes the Daily Stormer website underneath it. Daily Stormer, of course, a white nationalist website. Ari Hoffman, former Seattle City Council candidate, he tells Cairo 7 TV that this is incredibly disturbing, but he's not surprised by the anti-Semitism. You recall, as the only Jewish candidate, Orthodox Jewish candidate who was running, he was the subject of anti-Semitism by the same very people right now on Twitter who are claiming, oh, I wonder if conservatives and Jews, I wonder if Jason Rantz is going to talk about this story.
To receive something like this on that specific day is pretty horrifying. I got the notification yesterday. Yesterday was Tisha B'Av, which is one of the holiest days in the Jewish calendar.
What's your reaction to it?
It's not surprising. It's just another thing in a long string of events that happens to Jews around the world. It's upsetting. It's depressing. It makes me angry. But at the same time, it's something we're just accustomed to.
So I'm a bit confused by why Jewish individuals were targeted with this flyer, given the fact that the members of the Squad, AOC, for example, Ilhan Omar, they're not especially friendly to Jews or Israel. In fact, they hold and promote anti-Semitic positions. Rashida Tlaib, for example. So is it that the Daily Stormer or whomever is responsible for this, are they trying to tell Jews to go back from where we come from? And if that's the case, are you then comparing us to the Squad? I'm a little confused as to the message, but clearly when you're specifically targeting synagogues, Jewish temples, you're doing so with a very clear intent, unless this was a prank, I suppose, by someone else who maybe didn't have any tie, doesn't have any ties to white supremacy. It's a little bit weird, but for Miri Cypers, who is the regional director of the Pacific Northwest Anti-Defamation League, she tells Cairo 7 TV that this is an issue that's been spreading in the area as of recently.
Many, many minority communities in today's climate are really under siege. And this is actually part of what we think is a month-long coordinated effort where we found flyers by this white supremacist group in other synagogues, especially in North Seattle. But we've also learned of them in other churches in the Puget Sound. We've actually seen this group becoming more active in our area and more emboldened, but this is a new flyer and a new piece of propaganda that we've been seeing.
So police said a witness reported seeing a man outside of one of the synagogues around the time the flyer was found. He's being described as a Caucasian man who was wearing a black baseball hat, a black face mask, dark-colored aviator sunglasses, and a black zip-up hooded sweatshirt. So I'm not entirely sure I know how they believe this, why they believe this man is Asian, or excuse me, Caucasian instead of Asian or Latino or whatever, but they said he was also carrying a black suitcase. So, you know, police are saying if you have any information, call the police and report this. If this was intended specifically to send a message to Jews that we need to, quote unquote, go back to where we came from, obviously this counts as anti-Semitism in a city, as Miri Cypers just pointed out, a city that's seen an increase in hate crimes, a city that's seen an increase in anti-Semitism. And I tell you this as a Jewish member of the media, I see this anti-Semitism on a regular basis, and I see it coming from the same people who now are outraged that this flyer was posted. I see city actors, whether we're talking about the Seattle LGBTQ Commission or Shama Sawant's office, I see them coming up with events that are anti-Semitic in nature, going after Jews, claiming Israel is responsible for something called pinkwashing, which is them pretending to support LGBTQ rights while committing horrible acts of oppression against Palestinians. It is an anti-Semitic movement. I see BDS, Boycott, Divest, Sanction, an anti-Semitic movement gaining traction in this city, being taught at Seattle University. I see that happening at the same time, but I suppose now that we've got a flyer up that they also don't happen to like because it targets the Squad in it, I guess progressives all of a sudden are caring about the attacks on Jews. Got it. Cool. Thanks. Just double checking, because you don't seem all that mad about anti-Semitism when you guys are responsible for the anti-Semitism. But now when you've got a white nationalist that is going after the squad, anti-Semites who you support, now you're up in arms. I mean, I suppose beggars can't be choosers. I'll take people being up in arms about anti-Semitism finally. I just wish that maybe they would, you know, join the voices calling out the anti-Semitism when it hits closer to home for them and their ideology. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JasonRants, or just send the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. You'll be able to follow me, Saul Spady, Michael Medved, Ben Shapiro. Just send the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Pierce County?
Pam Roach announced this week that she's not going to seek re-election to the Pierce County Council. And now, as a consequence, Hans Zeiger is going to run to fill the 2nd District Council seat in 2020. But that also means, after 9 years in Olympia, he's stepping aside from his role as a state senator. Joining me on the line is Senator Zeiger. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it.
So you've decided to step away. Take us through your reason.
Well, I've been thinking about this for a little while and ready for a new adventure. When I came into the state Senate in 2017, we had a Republican majority. The Majority Coalition Caucus was running the Senate at that time, and that was fun to be a part of. It was challenging, and we were able to set the agenda for the state Senate. And really, there was a lot of balance in state government at that point in time. There had been, basically, from 2013 until we lost that majority in the 2017 election and a special election in East King County. And during that period of time, you had this narrow Democratic majority in the House, narrow Republican majority in the Senate. And I would argue that things worked pretty well in Washington State during that time. And we had balanced budgets. We had a lot of bipartisan collaboration on funding education. We passed the largest transportation investment package in state history. We lowered college tuition. We did all that on a bipartisan basis, showed that our system can work. And now what we're seeing is one-party rule in Olympia, and it's not working out so well. We saw massive tax increases that were not necessary this last session. We saw a lack of prioritization of some of the things that are on a lot of people's minds in terms of public safety and tackling the drug crisis that we have in our state. And so, as you know, as these changes have taken place, I'm thinking, where can I make the most difference? And I think the answer to that is in local government in Pierce County, where we have a Republican majority in the county council. We have a county executive who's doing tremendous good work in our county. And personally, I think it's just the right move for me to make. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to work there at the county if the voters of the 2nd Council District in Pierce County see fit to put me there.
Yeah, and hopefully they will. I think you would do a really good job in that position. But at the same time, I do worry about what this actually means for Republicans in Olympia. And to your point, the fact of the matter is Republicans don't have any control, and this potentially could make it even more difficult for Republicans to take control. Have you seen a different sort of demographic change in Puyallup, Fife, Midland, Parkland, which you currently represent, that might indicate this won't be an easy win for a Republican to take over?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm confident that the person who's going to announce very shortly for the Senate seat that I currently hold will be able to hold that Senate seat for Republicans and do a very good job. And so I'm expecting that announcement to happen shortly. So I feel very good about that. I also feel good about the direction of my particular district, which historically was a very Democratic district and then became a swing district in the late 80s and through the 90s and up to the point where I was elected in 2011 to the state house. I beat a Democratic incumbent who'd been there for 8 years. And then since 2014, we've had all three seats in our district, the two House seats and the Senate seat, remaining Republican. So I feel good about that, but I still consider it a swing district. And in this current political environment, we can't take anything for granted. We've got to work for everything that we have. So we've got to hold that Senate seat, and we've got to hold the two House seats that are in my district. And that's a similar story in other areas of suburban Puget Sound, where we can't take anything for granted in terms of what we already have, because if we lose any additional seats, that is not good news for the taxpayers of Washington State. and for citizens being able to, you know, influence their government in a reasonable and balanced way. You know, I think anytime one party or another, whether it's you know, all Republicans or all Democrats, sort of hold a monopoly on government, that's not necessarily good for balance and bipartisanship.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. Last question for you, because now I'm kind of curious. Was this decision based in part on whether or not Pam Roach was going to stay in that position, or were you planning on challenging her?
No, I was not going to challenge Pam. She and I have been in touch a lot in the last year, and you know, she and I have spent a number of hours on the phone chatting, and I've come to a much deeper understanding of what's going on in county government as a result of conversations I've had with her. She certainly had a long career in government, almost 3 decades in politics. You know, her service in the state Senate lasted 26 years, and then she switched over to the Pierce County Council. She has obviously been a real fighter for her constituents at both of the levels she served at.
Yes, and she's always good for giving us great content, both in the public eye and outside of it. We're a big fan of Pam Roach's. We're a big fan of yours as well. We wish you the absolute best of luck as you run in the 2nd District for the Pierce County Council. Again, we've been talking with State Senator Hans Zeiger. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports
ball. I have a question, Producer Tom. Question.
Proceed.
Mariner season still going on. Baseball season still happening.
Right.
How much time left?
Too much, if you ask me.
Like a lot. Okay.
Well, like, I don't know.
We're 3/4 of
40,
the way.
50 games.
In, okay.
Through September.
So no one knew Mariners were going to do well. They had this semblance of hope early on in the season when most people who know what it is they're talking about said, don't get your hopes up. And then, of course, they continued to disappoint. Is it normal to release the schedule for the next season this early? Is that normal?
I mean, I'm not, I guess. You know, I never thought about it. Probably.
Doesn't it seem weird? And again, maybe this is just what the MLB does. And I openly admit, not only do I not know, I'm not interested enough to do any of the research or even ask a colleague when we have ESPN in the building. Like, I won't even, that's how little I care about this. But I was thinking about the fact that the Mariners are just awful, and that sucks for the region because we all want a good baseball team. We want a good sports team, whatever league we're talking about, because it's good for the economy, it's good for the fan base, it's all cool, blah, 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 blah.
Take.
When you release the 2020 schedule at a time in which not only is this current schedule not even remotely close to being done with 40 or 50 games left, but also no momentum whatsoever on the side of the Mariners, it makes the season seem even longer than it is, and it makes the disappointment feel even harder.
Or it makes people look ahead to next year and be a little more optimistic and think,
but there's no reason to be optimistic about 2020, right?
More so than now, because there's going to be a completely different team.
Yeah, but even a completely different team is still not going to perform the way...
I think it's going to be tough to be less optimistic than right now. I think there's only one direction the optimism can go. So by default, there will be more optimism.
See, here's the thing. I don't believe that. I believe there's going to be less people thinking about the Mariners in any positive way at all. I think you'll have a lot of people who are hardcore fanatics who maybe at best will be a little optimistic, but they know they shouldn't be. You've got the people who will change not one bit, and then you'll have people like me who I would get excited if the Mariners were doing well. I would jump on that bandwagon. Seattle is very well known. This region is known for having kind of bandwagon fans, which is normal and healthy, and that's how you grow leagues and teams. I would get excited, but now I look at this and they say they're starting it with a 7-game homestead against the Rangers and the Twins to open the season next year, and I'm all like, but the current season is still happening. Yeah. I'm not crazy.
But, I mean, you also have people thinking, all right, well, I see 3 wins there and 4 losses there, and they're going to start looking into buying season tickets.
They're not.
And, well, I mean, that's the theory. Again, it's the Mariners, so it works.
Can we have
a little
bit of a break? Because part of my problem with baseball nowadays is there's just too many games, and I know that that's kind of a hackneyed complaint and stuff, but there are a lot of games.
You're right.
There are a lot of games.
There are. agree.
And it goes on for a very long time, and the games are so long and boring.
How do the players feel?
Oh, you know, whatever, they get paid enough. Oh, I'm a professional athlete who's getting paid lots of money to live a privileged life. Oh, woe is me, I just signed a $3 million deal.
I agree.
Oh my god, my work means I'm going to the gym a couple times a week and then I'm on the road and I'm playing baseball. Woe is me. You know what actual work is?
Don't say it.
An accountant. A dentist.
Yeah.
A brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
A talk show host. Real work.
Well.
That's actual work.
Three of those four, great examples.
Okay, fine. Dentist, not even really a doctor. 1-800-465-8770. I'm kidding. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. When we come back, Chris Cuomo went nuts. And it's not so much that I blame him for going nuts, but it's one thing that he said that is absolutely insane. We're going to get into it when we come back. You've been listening to What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to The Jason Rance Show, live in the online Trading Academy studio. Chris Cuomo over at CNN. Kind of crazy. He totally lost it. Now, to be clear, because I know a lot of you have already heard some of the audio and you're going to hear a lot more of it today. And I know some of you have already been covering this. You heard other shows talk about Rush Limbaugh was all in on this. I'm not so shocked that Chris Cuomo got upset when he was approached by a few people making fun of him. That's not it. Now, I agree with a lot of the takes that say he still reacted a little overboard, because I've certainly been in positions where people have mocked me out as I'm wandering around. Usually it happens around CenturyLink. I get it, and I've never gotten to this point where I've almost exploded, but Chris Cuomo, he just loses it. Now, it comes from a video that was uploaded by That's The Point, the Twitter account That's The Point with Brandon. It apparently happened in Shelter Island, New York. Chris Cuomo was out there with his wife and his kid, and the guy called him Fredo, which I'm told is a slur. Do we have music for this, by the way? Because I just want to set the stage a little bit, if you could. Just, he was called Fredo, which is like, he says the N-word?
I thought that's who you were.
No, fucking from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN.
Oh, you're much...
Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your
and
brother?
They use it as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian? It's a fucking insult to your people. It's an insult to your fucking people. It's like the N-word for us.
No, it's not. I'm also Italian. I'm a rare Italian Jew. It is not also the N-word. The N-word is the N-word. Fredo is Fredo, and we know that, as a similar joke by John Mulaney pointed out. The reason why we know that it's not the N-word is because I'm saying Fredo and not the F-word. I'm not saying it's Fredo.
They're not equal.
Yeah, they're not equal at all, like in any way, shape, or form. But please continue, Chris Cuomo, who takes his Italian heritage very, very seriously.
Wow. Is that a cool f***ing thing?
You're a much more reasonable guy in person than you seem to be on television.
Yeah, but if you want to play, you want to f***ing play. If you got something you want to say about what...
If you want to play, then we can play. If you got something to say, then why don't you just say it?
I did. I called you Fredo.
Oh, is that what you want to say?
That was literally it. I just wanted to call you Fredo and watch you go crazy.
Oh, but if that's what you want to say, why don't you just say it to my face?
I literally just said Fredo to your face like 14 times. It's all on this video here.
I'd go on television and say it, but I'm going to fall on your
f***ing. Hey, listen.
What?
I don't want any problems.
Yeah, you're going to have a big f***ing problem.
Ooh. What's the problem?
It's a little different on TV. Don't f***ing insult me like that.
I didn't insult you.
You call me Fredo. It's like I call you punk f***. You like that? You want that to be your nickname?
I didn't call you that.
You called me Fredo. You know my name now.
I
never realized that was such a triggering insult to Italians. Or maybe it's just him. I know lots of Italians. Again, I come from an Italian family on my mother's side. There's like, I've never heard this trigger such anger before. Have you ever heard this before?
No, I come from an Italian family. I just know him as a character from The Godfather.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Godfather in a very long time, nor do I think it's as good as people say, but Well, I'm just saying. I don't even remember the character, but I'm assuming it was not a good character.
It's fairly incompetent.
I mean, okay. Well, that, but that's Chris Cuomo. Brother. But that's right. Chris Cuomo. That's literally Chris Cuomo.
I think my name was Fredo. Don't be a liar. I thought you wanted to be a man. Stand up like a man.
I'm standing up, man.
Whoa. You didn't bleep that out. Fight like a man? Stand up like a man? Why do you have to gender this?
Well, he gendered
what,
it.
What does that mean?
I just forgot to.
Well, why can't they stand up like a woman and fight? What are you saying, Chris Cuomo?
Inexcusable.
That's kind of... That's a no-no. Woke police. Hey, woke police, where are you guys on this one? All of a sudden, they're silent.
Be a man out here. Then own what you said.
Listen, man, I have a problem with you. Man.
You're going to have a problem.
What are you going to do about it? I'll ruin you. I'll throw you down these stairs like a punk.
Okay, that's my favorite part, I think, beyond the absurdity of Fredo being the N-word. He goes, what are you going to do about it? I will ruin you. What are you going to do, throw me down the stairs? Oh, so you consume me? You just said you were going to ruin him, but then he said, okay, go ahead and ruin me, and then you're all like, why, so you consume me? You're the one who put it out there. I don't like this sort of faux machismo thing as well, which just like, oh, you're such a tough guy. I got it. You're a tough guy. We get you're so cool and buff and powerful. You're not going to do anything because you know you're going to get sued. Can we just stop that as well? That's the one thing about quote-unquote toxic masculinity, a stupid term that doesn't really mean anything, except in a case like this, it is kind of annoying. This kind of quote-unquote toxic masculinity is incredibly annoying to me.
Oh, what are you? You're such a tough guy. What you gonna do?
Okay, jeez.
Explode it.
That's not a healthy response. I get up being upset. I totally get that. That's not a healthy response. It's not a healthy response at all. Now, CNN is backing him, which I assume that they would do. Matt Dornick is a CNN communications vice president and spokesperson. He said that he stands behind Cuomo, who is being assaulted, verbally assaulted, and then he seems to back the idea of Fredo being a racial slur, which is kind of weird because when Fredo is used on his show on CNN, say by, Anna Navarro, he doesn't get upset at all.
He didn't even make the cut that his brother-in-law and sister did.
Talking about Don Jr.
To be part of the Oval Office and the White House staff. Daddy kept Fredo back home. So who cares what Donald Trump Jr. says?
And they just moved on. He didn't go all like, excuse me, Anna, while I understand the point you're trying to make, what you just did there is basically use the N-word on my show, and we don't do that here. And then Anna was all like, I didn't know that. Well, say it again to my face, and we'll see what you knew.
Well, it's cable television, so they can use that word.
Yeah, but he didn't show any kind of anger at all. And apparently he did this also on a radio show where he called himself Fredo. The Daily Caller has a report out saying that he called himself Fredo at one point on a radio show in New York. And so this is just kind of weird where he decided to go with it. He got some interesting support from Sean Hannity, who tweeted, good for Cuomo. He said he's out with his 9-year-old daughter and his wife, and this guy is being a jackass in front of his family. In my humble opinion, Chris Cuomo has zero to apologize. He deserves the apology. Now, I agree with that, I guess. I don't think he owes anybody an apology. I think it's kosher to point out how he went from 0 to 60, at least on this video, in a disturbingly quick way, right?
Will Cuomo ever defend Hannity on anything, though?
Maybe this gives him the opening now to at least have a little bit. So even in the world of radio, where we all hate each other and want each other to fail, like our direct competitors, I want all of my competitors to fail, and I want to be number one. There is that kind of bond between radio hosts, and it's the same with TV people, both on cable news and on network news. They support each other in that. They have a shared experience. We all have a shared experience that is kind of hard to understand when you don't have that experience. And so when you've experienced the kind of attacking on Twitter that Cuomo or Hannity has, you kind of bond in a weird way, even against the people that you technically want to see fail. I doubt, however, that he's going to return the favor. And by the way, here's the audio from when Chris Cuomo referred to himself as Fredo.
La Cuomo Nostra.
that there is a group of people, of politicos, who always hint that they might run but don't necessarily plunge all the way, and they are members of La Cuoma Nostra.
So who am I then, Fredo?
No! Yes. He just used the N-word! I mean, in the form of Fredo. But he just did that.
I hope that was late night radio.
No, that's from Curtis Silva's show that used to be on in mornings.
Oh, you can't say that.
Gosh. What do people think should happen as a result of that? Can we just move on? I mean, I do want to make fun of Fredo. And now I constantly want to call him Fredo nonstop over and over and over again. The weird thing is there are actual slurs that you can use against Italians that are bad, and you can maybe make a better argument is more reflective or comparable to the N-word. Maybe. I'm thinking of some in my head. I'm not going to say them on the radio, but that one. That's a bad one.
I don't know what you said. I don't want to say it.
No, but you just saw me say it. That's bad.
Right. That's bad. Very bad.
Okay. You don't seem to think it's as bad as I thought.
I was thinking like greaser. Is that a slur?
No, I mean it's not. It's an insult, I guess. 1-800-465-8770. How are we beyond just making fun of Fredo now? How should CNN do anything? I don't think they should. In fact, maybe CNN will spend more time focused on this because we have some breaking news that Don Lemon has been accused of an assault at a bar by a man. It's part of a lawsuit we're going to talk about later on in the show. So I suppose maybe they should just focus on the Fredo controversy and distract from the Don Lemon controversy. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Producer Darren from the Saul Spady Show, he sent me a note. And he's a good producer because he was able to find this before producer Tom, so maybe you and I at some point should have a conversation about your future. You have an iPhone? You know how it has the Siri business?
The Siri business,
yeah.
Yes.
It lets you, do you know how to do it? Okay, right? That thing, the little noise?
Yeah.
So if you ask it, hey Siri, how old is Chris Cuomo? It gives you an answer. Let's see if it works. Oh no, but it heard me. Hold on. Hey, Siri, how old is Chris Cuomo?
Fredo Cuomo is 49 years old.
That's awesome.
Come on. Poor Chris Cuomo. Now I feel bad for him. Speaking of Italians who are incredibly annoying, Anthony Scaramucci is back in the news. He's had a weird relationship with President Trump because on the one hand, he was the big Trump supporter, even though he spent maybe 72 seconds as communications director for the White House before he was let go. But since then, he's been kind of using his that little connection to the White House as why he's an expert on Trump, and that's what's getting him on MSNBC and CNN and Fox News. But all of a sudden, there was a little bit of a rift between the Mooch and Donald Trump, and today, Donald Trump fully just threw him under the bus. So Anthony Scaramucci, according to the president, kept calling the White House, trying to get a hold of the president so he can get another job back in the White House, which would then, of course, be really good for his career. He was denied that. And now Trump is saying, well, that's the reason why Scaramucci is going on and on and on about how evil Trump is, including this clip from CNN.
There's a pernicious evil in trying to divide the country. And so at the end of the day, you know, I'm really a very big time pragmatic person. I'm not really an ideologue. And so when I step back and look at where we are as a nation, we could be doing so much better than we're doing right now. We wake up in the morning, we're like, okay, what's he going to do now? What's he going to say? How is he going to say it? And in the beginning, it was sort of entertaining. And in the beginning, you're like, okay, there's real change needed in Washington. So hopefully this will provide some level of disruption. But now we're at the point where we're like, okay, what is this all about? Is this about the country? Is this about the individual?
So, all of a sudden, he does a 180 and goes after the president. And not only did he talk about the pernicious evil, but then he goes on to say the Republican Party should consider replacing Trump on the ticket.
You know, last week, arguably one of the worst weeks in his presidency. And again, I'm not talking about things that happened to him politically from a legislation point of view or things like that, but just from the way he's acting as a human being. So to me, a couple more weeks like this, I really do believe there will be a groundswell in the party where people say, hey, the policies are great, but you're setting us up the way Jimmy Carter set up the Democratic Party, where they went into the wilderness for 40 years.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen, what he just said. What he just said there, not going to happen. There's not going to be a ground surge of support to get rid of the president off of the ticket. That's just not going to happen. There's no indication that that's going to happen. There's not even been a hint of any kind of ground surge. We've certainly heard a whole bunch of people who are Republicans who are unhappy with President Trump. Some of them decided to completely leave the party. We're talking about the Joe Scarboroughs of the world nationally. We're talking about Chris Vance here locally, who was once the Washington State GOP chairman, has decided to completely ignore the Republican Party and move away. That's not indicative of where the country is, nor is it indicative of where the Republican Party is. It's not. We would get so much more of a hint that that's coming. We don't have anyone who would be able to step up and run for president as a Trump replacement. Can you think of one Republican right now who has a high-profile enough name to unseat a sitting president for the nomination of president from his own party? Who is that person? That person does not exist. It is not going to happen. But Scaramucci is now going on TV, and he is making all of these proclamations because he knows that CNN will put him on. Now, as much, who do I hate more than anybody on all any network?
Stephanie Ruhle.
She is the absolute worst, isn't she? She is the worst. But I will give her kudos. I would send her a tweet, but she blocked me, so I can't do this publicly. But on the radio, I'll give her kudos. She was the only one I saw push back against Anthony Scaramucci in this new tour of being anti-Trump. He's on the anti-Trump tour on media outlets. He goes on, she goes, oh, all of a sudden you're against the president, but for the longest time you were in his camp. And he didn't really have a good explanation for that. And do you believe, because I certainly believe that when the president says Scaramucci has been calling us and calling us and calling us trying to get a job here, we finally told him, no, stop calling. That's why he's become such an anti-Trump voice. Do you believe that? I do. That makes sense. And there's nothing that ever seemed organic or legitimate with Scaramucci. Whenever he was up there and he was trying to put all the members of the press in his place, that wasn't just him. That was all contrived. And that's okay. He was doing a performance. He was being a political, theatrical, I don't know, understudy for someone who's clearly more qualified for the job in Sarah Sanders. So, we bid you farewell, Scaramucci. He does follow me on Twitter. That's something. But that's because I'm important.
He
follows me on Twitter. Essie Cupp does. Dana Perino, who I actually like. Jenna Jameson, the porn star who became a big GOP member. Yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants.